All right, back in here, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game, 7 o'clock hour here on a Monday, busy hour coming up. We'll get to the Nashville Predators in a little bit. Also, they start up a four-game road trip tonight in Detroit. The puck drop at 6:30 here on 102.5, the game, and also be listening this hour for your chance to qualify for the Winter Classic Flyaway, where you will go to the Cotton Bowl to see the Preds take on the Dallas Stars. But right now, we welcome in our buddy Corey Curtis from News 2 to talk all things Tennessee Titans. Corey, I said an hour ago I'd love to come in here fired up and angry today, but I thought for about a week in a row, for 6 days, I said Titans are probably going to lose by 7 to 10 points, and that's exactly what transpired. What's your biggest takeaway?
I saw the game. I saw the exact game I expected to see. I think that, yep. You know, I think on TN Nation, all four of us picked the Titans to lose this game. I expected them to go there and to struggle offensively and to look inconsistent and look disjointed and just look like they don't have it all together. And that's exactly what they looked like, except some of the problems bled over to the defensive side of the ball this time.
I mean, one of the biggest takeaways for me, Corey, is just trying to understand what exactly are the game plans going into each of these games? Like that's now 0 points in a four. That's four games now. They've scored no points in the first half out of nine with Arthur Smith. Regardless of the quarterback, the offensive line's an issue. I get all of that, but I mean, isn't there some questions about preparation that need to be answered this week?
Well, look, last week they played the 32nd ranked pass defense in the league. And in the first half, they had one completion on six targets to their wide receivers for 1 yard. This week, you're playing a defense giving up 135 yards rushing a game, and Derrick Henry has two touches in the first half. I understand that there's other things that you want to work on, but I also understand that you've got to attack areas of another team that's a deficiency, don't you? I mean, you're letting them off the hook otherwise. And, you know, they just seemed really happy to let those last two teams off the hook with where they're struggling. I mean, I get wanting to get Deion Lewis going and thinking he can help you. And he was making some productive plays. He was. But, I mean, Derrick Henry's arguably been your best, most consistent offensive player this year. To completely take him out of the game for 30 minutes just doesn't make a lot of sense. I go back to that Colts game when they were in control of the game headed into the fourth quarter. Henry was pounding away and they took him out and put in Deion Lewis. And I think they ran him twice. He got nothing and they punted and lost control of the football game. I mean, they're doing some things that don't make a lot of sense. But the biggest reason I think they don't make a lot of sense is because they're not able to do anything consistently. It's not just from game to game. It's from quarter to quarter and drive to drive.
Corey, we said earlier that, this has just been a recipe for disaster with the Titans in regards to Arthur Smith. No one has solidified themselves as the quarterback. Coming in, you had a quarterback that was on the last year of his deal. There was no, re-signing in the near future. You had an offensive line that was poor. The receiving core is new. And it just felt like, this is a recipe for disaster. And it seems like that's what's happening, that all of these things are coming together. Now, maybe if they had a more seasoned offensive coordinator, it would be a little bit different, but it hasn't been. And now you're starting to see it bleed over into the defense. For so long, the first eight games of the season, the defense, or seven games of the season, the defense held it down. And now you're starting to see that these guys are getting tired, they're getting beat up, and no longer can they, be that plug for you anymore. That plug is starting to shrink. And the last 2 weeks has shown a defense that seemed very tired, and they're losing guys in the process.
Yeah. I mean, they can only hold it so long. I mean, I think Vol expected it at some point. I know a lot of people like to point to, well, they're frustrated because they can't do it all game, every game. you know, the bottom line is, like you said, they're on the field too much. They're, you know, they can't have mistakes, because the moment they have a mistake, that they're toast. But, you know, with Arthur Smith and whoever the offensive coordinator is, it is very difficult to call plays if you do not have consistent play on the offensive line. And they do not have consistent play on the offensive line. Tannehill got sacked four more times yesterday. You know, there were, you know, more penalties. Taylor Lewan had back-to-back. And the bigger question is, how come this offensive line, which they invested so heavily in, is so much more unreliable than it was 2 and 3 years ago? That's what they've got to figure out. Is it the players? Is it the scheme? Is it the coaching? Because they've got to be able to answer that question before they can fix what's wrong with them.
Corey, we were discussing yesterday on the pregame show with Floyd and Chris Sanders, Deion Lewis, and we saw Deion Lewis with a mistake yesterday. And I said something to the effect of Floyd that I can't see John Robinson bringing a backup running back next year in 2020 at $5 million per year. Is there any chance Deion Lewis is just flat out gone at the end of this year?
Yeah, I can't remember what his dead money number is next year, but most of the deals they signed before this year are escapable after about two seasons, and I'm assuming Deion Lewis is going to be one of those as well. It would be very difficult, you know, when you look at what his contribution has been this year, it would be virtually impossible to bring him back next year. Because with all of his surgeries and with his age, he's not going to get better either. You know, and also Derrick Henry may not be back after this year. You know, you would like to think so, but he may not be. Either way, they're going to have to be in the market of drafting a running back, and they're not going to be able to do it in the first round because they're going to have to draft a quarterback. So they're going to have to replace, you know, some very important pieces on the offensive side of the ball. The question is just how many. But, you know, they definitely need – you know, that third down guy. But even if not the third down guy, just the guy who can do it all. You know, you watch a lot of running backs in this league, you know, who just make very athletic plays catching the football and in the field. And that's not to say that Derek is not an athlete, but he's not that McCaffrey, Kamara, Austin Eckler type that can do it all on every down. Now, he can do a lot of things really well that can help you. But he's not that guy, and they need to find that guy somewhere.
Corey, normally I'm the cynic and sort of like the negative guy, but I feel like I'd much rather be playing in meaningful football games, vying for a playoff spot, even if it's just a slim chance to make the playoffs, than sort of tanking for a better draft pick, because you only get 16 games in a 365-day calendar year. And I don't know where you fall on this. I just don't see the value of picking ninth versus picking 15th, you know, if there's a chance we can make the playoffs. Where do you fall on that scale of sort of evaluating the needs for the Titans moving forward versus maybe, you know, a slim percentage chance that you could actually enjoy, you know, some meaningful football games late in December?
Well, like at 2-4, I said I think their season's over. I looked at the schedule and I just said they can't go 8-2. I mean, when you look at the teams they're going to play and how inconsistent they are, that they're not going to make the playoffs. And, you know, some people thought I was crazy, you know, putting things way too early. And I wasn't saying they couldn't do it, but there was nothing they've shown me that they were capable of doing it on a consistent basis. Now, having said that, I am never one for losing. I am never one for not trying to win. Even if you've got the first pick of the draft locked up going into week 16, I am for going out and playing week 16 to win the game. I just think there's a way to do things and a way not to do things. And trying to lose is not one of those things, in my opinion. I think it sets a bad tone for your franchise and for your fans and for everything. And so I know there's a lot of fans who would just rather see them win or lose as much as possible the rest of the way to get the best draft pick. Look, the Patriots haven't picked first in a long time, and they keep finding good players, all right? You just got to go find good players, but you play to win the game.
And, yeah, you're absolutely right, and I told the guys it's not necessarily where you're picking, it's who is doing the picking.
And developing.
Yeah, exactly. And so you see people like Pittsburgh, New England, teams that are consistently, you know, in the playoffs. They're always going to pick dead, you know, basically last in the first round. But it's they're developing the players, and the guy that's picking the players are doing a fairly good job. Looking at the season and the way it's going, you know, they go 3 straight seasons, 9-7, make a playoff in one of those seasons. If they finish, you know, worse than 9-7 this year, do you believe now the clock is on for? Because these are the questions we're going to have to start.
Yeah.
Not for Vrabel, but I'm saying for John Robinson.
Yeah, no, the clock went on as soon as they benched Marcus Mariota. The clock was ticking because they've got to find the next guy. And if the next guy isn't the guy, then they're all gone. That's why I said 2021, we're going to find out if this coaching staff and if this GM and his group are going to continue or not. Because if they don't have the right quarterback at that point and can't get this team to the next level, then they're going to find somebody else who can.
Corey, always a pleasure. We appreciate the time as always. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, fellas. Hey, we get to see Patrick Mahomes next week.
Yeah, the Titans Titans will probably win by 21 that day.
Yeah,
yeah. You know, I heard that the opening line was only going to be like 3.5 points, and I said, what does Vegas know that we don't know? Because I would jump all over that campus.
Did you see the Chargers yesterday? It's called the NFL.
Yeah, no. Hey, you know what? You're exactly right. Did you see the Bucs go up to Seattle and almost knock off the Seahawks?
Yep.
Stupid league.
It's a crazy league.
It really is. Corey, thank you.
All right, later, guys.
You got it. Corey Curtis from News 2. You know, I would really love to go to the game next week. I just don't see the Titans score many points.
Well, Chiefs defense sucks. So.
Yeah, well, we thought that the Bucs pass defense sucked, and we thought the Carolina rush defense sucked.
That was the coach's fault, Derek.
And look what happened. So we can say,
they won one of those games you just mentioned.
Something can happen again.
I don't know. They it's just the NFL, man. Like watching the Chargers yesterday, watching that defense against the Packers, and I'm just going, like the Packers had like 68 yards going into the fourth quarter. I'm going, what the hell team is this? Like that's not the team that played here in Nissan Stadium a couple weeks ago.
Very true. Coming up next, one interaction and one assumption. It is Morning Drive, and be listening for that cue to call. Could be happening any moment. Back after this on ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Man, listen up. I've been telling you this for over a year now, going on 2 years, about my friends over at Cool Springs MD. Listen, more men have started to seek help for hormone deficiencies and imbalances. Dr. Jeffrey Lodge and his wife Daphne, along with that experienced staff, they will give men the treatment required to improve their quality of life. Yes, man, we need a better quality of life. As we get older, you know, things tend to, you know, slow down for us. And I'm not just talking mentally. Cool Springs MD services have already helped many men of the Brentwood, Nashville, Franklin, and the surrounding areas in Tennessee with improving their immune systems, energy levels, cognitive functions, and more. They are there to connect you with the medical care you require to have a healthy and enriched life. And who doesn't want a more enriched life? We all do. And there's no better time to achieve a healthier lifestyle. What are you waiting on, man? Pull out that cell phone. Pull over first. Then pull out your cell phone. Or if you're sitting at your desk and you're listening to us on an app, 1025 Nashville, 1025, 949, The Game Nashville. That's what it is. Boom. The Game Nashville. Then pull out your pencils or your pens and give Cool Springs MD a call to make an appointment. Because here's the number. 615-486-3458, 615-486-3458, or visit the website at CoolSpringsMD.com.
Predators game day here on ESPN 102.5 The Game as Nashville starts up a 4-game road swing that will begin at 6:30 tonight here on ESPN 102.5 The Game against the Detroit Red Wings. We will get to the Preds from Saturday coming up in just about 15 minutes. Also the cocktail party as well. Between Florida and Georgia, do you guys want the interaction or the assumption first? The interaction was via DM. Yeah, the assumption is just something that just popped into my head about 20 minutes ago.
Let's go interaction.
Okay. So Saturday night, right? Go to bed, 10:30 or so, shut off social media, fall asleep, wake up Sunday morning, getting ready to go down to do the pregame show, filling in for Jared with Floyd and Chris. Check my Twitter, check my mentions, check my DMs. Got a DM from Spiro Ditas, NFL play-by-play man for CBS. who Titans fans you should all love because he's the official, well, I should say, he's the unofficial television play-by-play man of your Tennessee Titans because, as we know, the Titans are in the AFC, and the AFC is carried by CBS, and Spiro Ditas and Adam Archuleta usually do Titans games. That's what happens when you're, you know, largely irrelevant. You get the third or fourth broadcast team. So I get a DM from Spiro Ditas. He says, "Hi, Nick. Do we know each other? Have we ever met, worked together, crossed paths?"
I think we should have done a dramatic interpretation.
Hey,
Nick. This is Spiro.
You seem to tweet about me a lot. Care to discuss?
I will say it is interesting that you tweet about this man a lot.
So I pulled
How
up.
How many times have you tweeted about him?
Yeah. Well, I've got three of them right here since October 13th.
And why aren't you tagging him in them?
I didn't know he was on Twitter.
Well,
and once I realized he is, he's got 3,700 followers, and that's why I didn't know he was on Twitter because he's got no followers.
But I just always think it's appropriate that if you're going to tweet about somebody, you just do a quick search to see if they're on Twitter. I just think that that's the right thing to do. That way, even though you didn't really mean anything negative by it, there could be misunderstanding there. So I always want to tag people in the tweets just to make sure that I'm saying it to their face, Stillman.
And it's not so it's not so much that I'm ripping Spiro Ditas because I think he's a solid guy. It's more of a shot at the Titans organization that, when you're basically irrelevant, these are the broadcast teams you get.
What game did he call yesterday?
He got the Jets and the Dolphins.
Yikes.
So we were actually elevated. We had Greg Gumbel yesterday and I think Trent Green. So we had like the number three team. So I tweeted a couple of things in the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I said, Andrew Catalan and James Lofton. Nothing says marquee NFL football like Catalan and Lofton calling your game. I guess Spiro Ditas is on vacation this week. That was one.
That's a bit of a backhanded compliment.
I also tweeted, Taylor Zarzur and Matt Stinchcomb call Vols games as often as Spiro Ditas and Adam Archuleta call Titans games. And then the great Teresa Walker this past week tweeted out that Chiefs and Titans on November 10th, which will be this upcoming Sunday, will be on CBS, and we're actually going to get Nance and Romo, which we did for week one against the Browns, because all the hype with Cleveland. And I quote tweeted Teresa, and I said, well, it's not going to be the same without Spiro Ditas.
It was that
you there's a lot.
Am I throwing shade at Spiro?
No, it was that you inserted his name multiple times.
Yeah, you're putting a lot of Spiro Ditas on your timeline.
and the crazy part about it is that
I'd sign with Nike.
You didn't tag him, so he had to go looking for it.
Yeah, that's weird.
And that's why I wanted to bring it up. Like, is he searching his name to see what the haters are saying? Because we know broadcasters get hated on all the time.
I think it's both.
It's not just haters, too. It's everything.
He's tweeting to see what people are saying good about him and bad about him. But
Saturday night at midnight?
I just did a quick Google search for myself just because I haven't really ever done that. The fourth picture that comes up is a picture of Nick Cale.
for what?
I just Google searched my own name just for the first time. I have never done that. I just wanted to see.
And my
face
comes up?
There's a picture. I went to images and just you're in the top 10 of results for my name.
Now, just full disclosure, here is a complimentary tweet that I sent Spiro Ditas. So I didn't tag him because I didn't know he was on Twitter. But October the 20th, I tweeted about him. I said, not sure how I feel about Ian Eagle doing the Titans game today. Spiro Ditas has grown on me. I'm giving love to Spiro.
I think you guys should develop an online relationship.
I think we should get him on the show.
100%.
Yeah,
Marquise, let's get him on.
Now, here's the is it taboo? Because we know Derek watches film of himself from time to time. He's got all the tapes in the bonus room there, and he'll just pop in some, I'm feeling like an 03 day, and he just watches some highlights from 03. Is it inappropriate, illegal, whatever, violation for a broadcaster to be searching Twitter to find out what people are saying about him, positively or negatively? I mean, again, you're going to get a lot of everything, right? You're going to get negative and positive. Is it a violation to do that? Do you do it?
No, I do not.
I have not ever done it.
No.
I kind of want to now, though.
I don't know.
Most of the time, people just send me the hate directly, so I don't need to search for it.
I mean, either way is going to make you mad. Because even if you get, if you get 20 responses or whatever, if you get one that's bad, you're gonna be upset.
True.
Don't even go looking.
Twitter isn't real life, baby.
That's right.
Twitter's not real life.
Let me give you guys an assumption. Tell me if you think I'm off base. This show specifically, Morning Drive, we are not a caller heavy show. We take calls on certain topics. when we're going to go multiple segments on some really good, juicy stuff.
And there's a couple of callers that have earned their way into
right.
the show.
But
Tyrikus, for example,
sure.
can always get in.
And you guys know you're more than welcome to call at any point, 615-737-1025. We'll give out the number, you know, here and there. But we don't sit here and beg for calls. There's three of us doing a show, so it just makes sense that we're very judicious with our selection of calls. But if there's one day where we take a ton of phone calls, it's on a Titans Monday coming off of a game. We've been on the air for an hour and 25 minutes. We have gotten zero Tennessee Titans calls. My assumption
There's nothing to say.
My assumption being it took one loss from Ryan Tannehill for Tennessee Titans fans to check out. And that's not a shot at Titans fans. That's a shot at the organization.
Yeah.
Because that's how little faith they had. They were just waiting for the first loss with Tannehill to know that it's a wrap.
Well, and let's be honest, as we said last week, you can't depend on a two-play goal line stand and two drives that start on like the 7-yard line to win football games. It's not a recipe for sustained success. It is great that you got the wins in those moments. But the idea, and again, I'm not picking on Stillman here, but the idea that Ryan Tannehill and the offense played, quote, amazing football last week is just a crock. Like, it's just nonsense. And we saw it again this week, another terrible first half. And so I think your main point, Nick, about how you're not really fired up or whatever, there's no, like, anger or vitriol. You're just sort of – it's like apathy. You've accepted the fact that they're just what they are. And they lost the way we – maybe not the exact way we expected. I didn't expect – like, we all knew Christian McCaffrey was going to get his. He got his yesterday. There's no question about that. They had a tough time stopping him. You know, Malcolm Butler with what reports indicate are a broken wrist. Maybe he needs surgery. We'll find out more information today. That's a really big piece of news. The idea that the coaching staff was not prepared in any way, shape, or form to run an offense in the first half against what we all could see as a terrible rushing defense, again, is a story. But outside of those sort of games within the game, I don't think anything that happened yesterday is all that surprising to anybody. Nobody's waking up this morning, running into the office saying, can you believe X, Y, and Z? And that's just where this team is. And listen, I thought this team would be good. I thought this was a good football team that was going to compete in a division that was wide open because there are question marks for the Texans. Andrew Luck had retired and the Jags were the Jags. Well, you know, I thought for sure this team was the most stable and had the best defense of the group and could win nine or ten games, and you know, I think I picked them 10-6 to win the division. Well, it's just not the way it is. The offensive line, the investment with Nate Davis and Roger Saffold hasn't worked. The quarterback situation is what it is. The offensive coordinator clearly is showing that he cannot create a game plan to come out of the gate and produce. He's shown a decent job adjusting, I guess. I don't know if he deserves credit for that, but Mike Vrabel has made consistently questionable decisions at the end of games all along the season. That was refreshing yesterday, frankly, that we weren't faced with one of those. They have the worst field goal kicking situation in the entire NFL. Listen, that one's on John Robinson for me. Why did you activate Ryan Succop yesterday? He clearly wasn't ready. But just keep Cody Parkey for another game, right?
Like, well, that was what you texted me yesterday. He shouldn't have been on the field.
He shouldn't have been on the field.
He wasn't ready.
He still should have, you know, been on. I'm not going to say IR, but there was no reason for you to cut Parkey. Let him go another game. Make sure the Succop's fully healthy, and then put him back in there. But I don't know how long he had been practicing. Maybe he had been practicing the last 2 weeks. I don't know.
But you also have the bye week after the Chiefs,
exactly.
So that would be another week to kind of heal.
Absolutely. So just, you know, let him get fully healthy and let him come in after the bye or either the Kansas City game. And look quickly and looking at what the offense did. There were some good things. There were some positive. I think Ryan Tannehill played well. That interception, I'm not going to say that was on because it wasn't on him. You know, the young guy got to catch the football. It was right there in his
hands.
What
about the other interception?
He got to get, and the other interception,
where he just threw it directly to the safety.
No, you could tell if you continue to watch what was going on. He went on the sideline, and you could see him and Humphreys, and he was motioning to Humphreys standing right next to him, come in. He was telling you to come in, and I think Humphreys was agreeing with him.
I think it was Raymond.
Yeah, he would say he was telling Humphreys Raymond should have came in,
right.
And those are the things that if you don't really understand the game, you don't know. is that no, I'm not. It's just for anybody. I'm just saying it's like we look at interceptions sometimes and we say, even with Marcus, I would have said the same thing with Marcus. If he'd have went back on the sideline and been motioning to the guy, well, it was – do you blame the young guy? That's his second game playing. Do you blame the young guy that he'd been breaking in? But he's played in the league long enough that he should know. Cover two, you need to bend that thing in. And at least if it's not a completion, it's not an interception either. He just didn't bend it in, and the quarterback is thinking he's supposed to bend it in. That happened 2 weeks in a row, once last week with Jameis, this week with Ryan Tannehill. But if you look at Ryan's numbers and what he was able to do, he played a good football game. They just didn't win.
Coming up next, we will look back to Saturday and look ahead to a four-game road trip. A little Predators talk when we come back. Predators in Detroit tonight to skate with the Red Wings. It's Morning Drive here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Back out for Roman Josi. Yossi for Forsberg. In front, they score this time. No denying that. The bumper got in the middle of it, and Victor Arvidsson tipped it home. Power play goal. And that also turns out to be our Hermitage first goal of the game for Nashville. And it comes here in the second period. Check by Shea. Comes back Yossi. The shot blocked. 1 second to go, and that's going to do it. The Rangers hang on and beat the Nashville Predators here on this Saturday afternoon by a 2-1 count.
We're chasing the game. You know, you fall down. I actually thought that we were probably at our best parts of the game defensively and fell down 2-0. And so kind of unfortunate the way that happened. And then from there, you're pressing. You got to give them some credit. They played good defense. Their goaltender played well. You know, we missed some opportunities, missed some shots, hit the post a few times, and just couldn't seem to get it to fall tonight. So that's what happens when you're coming from behind. But like I said, I thought we were fairly tight when we were behind and we were pressing offensively. It just, that's the way the game went today and the game we had to play. And then when we did start to press, we opened up a little bit more defensively, and Juice made some big saves to keep us in there and give us a chance.
Pete Weber, the call. Peter LaViolette, the post-game commentary as the Predators lose on Saturday to the New York Rangers. They start up a four-game road trip tonight in Detroit. So you take the heartbreaking loss, basically the buzzer beater Thursday night on Halloween. You have a matinee game on Saturday, and you lose. Surprise, surprise. Stop me if you've heard this before. Predators not only play down to their competition, but they lose a game on Saturday, which is kind of like a new tradition.
I do think the Rangers are better than their record indicates. They're going to be a better team than that as the season goes along. So they've gotten off to a slow start. They'd also only played like two games in like 15 days or something strange like that. They had a weird schedule. I will say this. It's really, really hard to analyze hockey when you've got an 18-month-old sitting on your lap in the stadium. That was the first time I've done that during like a regular season game. It's really, really hard to analyze. Like it's hard enough sitting at home, like taking notes and like rewinding and using the HD cameras and everything. But my 18-month-old had such a great time at the game on Saturday. It's her first ever Preds game. My dad was dealing with the 3-year-old sitting next to us, so we had a great time. The girls had a great time. It's impossible.
But you guys were even strength. It was 2-on-2.
Yeah, yes, we okay. were. Yeah. We were right. Even strength. No question about it. There's no chance I'm taking both of them by myself. Yeah. No chance. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, when the girls get on the power play, the dad's in trouble.
They were on the power play all weekend, so I welcomed the extra attacker when my dad showed up and gave me some help for a couple of hours on Saturday. But yeah, the girls were on the power play for about 48 hours. Thank you, Disney Movies. I do appreciate the help. No, we had listen. Here's the one thing I did know, though. I was sitting there, and so the only time of the game that my oldest doesn't like, Marin, the oldest, is when the Preds score, which is ironic because she likes the Preds. But it's so loud in there,
sure.
She can kind of get scared from time to time because it gets so, you know, everybody gets so worked up on a goal. But I knew that the goal was coming. So we were sitting there, and I go, all right, Marin, when the Preds score, because he put Jofa back together, and for some actual analysis here. They put Jofa back together for a little while, and they were tearing it up, right? Just the entire second period in particular, they were playing in the Rangers' end most of the period in front of us. And Jofa was just absolutely red hot. And so when they got the power play, I looked at my 3-year-old, and I go, all right, when the Preds score here, it's going to get really loud. Just be careful. I wanted to warn her. And then, like, not even a minute later, they score on the power play, and the place goes absolutely bonkers, and Arvidsson gets the goal. And she's kind of like – she doesn't know if she should be happy or not. She's kind of like, you know that look in their face where, like, I really want to go up to this doorbell and ring it and get some candy?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I'm not sure. I'm kind of nervous. That's what was her look was, but it was the first time she wasn't scared of a goal. So we had that going for us. You guys can take the hockey analysis.
No, two really good things, though, from Saturday. One, it was the first of two hockey fights cancers, nights or days for the Preds. And that was a really cool moment to bring that little girl out there who's dealing with cancer. I believe it was a girl. If it was a boy, apologize. It was a girl. Yeah. And that was really awesome. But also, the Winter Classic jerseys were unveiled.
Dude.
I mean, if there's somebody that doesn't like those, 100%. You got bad taste.
Dude, so the throwbacks to the Dixie Flyers, of course, the old Dixie Flyers, and that is as awesome a uniform, a sweater, as I have seen.
I would spend the $270 for it in a heartbeat.
I'm 100% on board with you. Excellent job on the logo, on the new uniform, on the sweater for the Winter Classic. That is as awesome a design as I've seen any – and. So let's be honest. Some of the Preds jerseys back in the day with like 16 colors and like the silver and the blue, like there's a reason they've simplified it and gone gold because they know it's better. But man, they hung that giant Roman Yossi, you know, poster downtown on the building next door on the new mm-hmm. Broadway building or whatever. It is awesome. So excellent job. Kudos to the Preds for that.
Let me ask you guys this, because everybody on Saturday, because I had the college football game on the big TV, and then at 1 o'clock I put the Preds on. And everybody was tweeting, like, for the hour leading up to the game, love matinee hockey, love matinee hockey. We need more Saturday early starts. I'm at a point in sports where I would be okay. Like, to me, the earlier the better for every sport.
Is that an age thing, you think?
I don't even know, because, you know, when I was 23, 2005, me and my wife took a family vacation with the in-laws to Hawaii. And one of the greatest things was it was the NFL wild card weekend. Mm-hmm. And getting up and watching NFL playoff football at 8 in the morning is tremendous.
That's why it's good to live on the West Coast.
Like, you get up, you make your coffee, you make your eggs, and you're sitting down watching sports. I like early starts in every sport.
I do too, but it's more of an age thing. Like, I loved late games when I was younger. To me, it's more, like, the reason I like the Titans, and again, this is totally selfish, the reason I like the Titans games at noon is because that's when my daughters nap. So I can actually sit down and, like, take notes. The 3 o'clock start times... That's like right during dinner, just feeding them dinner and going mm-hmm. to bed, and it's just chaos, right? So, like, but that's only that's a temporary phase of my life. Please tell me that's a temporary phase of my life. Please tell me that they will go put themselves to bed at some point in their lives.
They will.
So when that happens, then I won't care. It'll be a lot easier. But yeah, give me, you know, 10 a.m. college football would be great. I know it starts at 11, but 10's pretty good. I don't mind that. NFL could start a little earlier. I wouldn't mind 11 a.m. kickoffs, but I don't really, I like having my mornings to sort of do what I want to do. You know, we get to, you know, you go eat breakfast with the kids, go to the park or whatever. Like I like having a buffer there. So I don't want it to start at like 8 or 9 a.m.
Like the 11 a.m. starts.
Yeah, those are good.
Like college football does the 11 a.m. somewhere around there. Cause there's 12 up north. Except if you're in Chicago. But it's usually noon. But the 11 o'clock works well. I enjoy
God's time zone.
Turning it on and just, you know, watching it. And typically it's a Big Ten game or an ACC game that's playing at like 11 o'clock.
Well, here's where I'll contradict myself. Super Bowls, championship settings, playoffs. Like, remember, I was ripping on the baseball. Major League Baseball having playoffs at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I think is bad. Like, Bama LSU, I think, should be a night game. But regular season games, Preds Rangers, NFL games, the early, like, I love the London idea.
Did you notice how much that CBS was pushing LSU Bama during the NFL games?
Yeah.
They showed Eric Reed. They were like, Eric Reed, safety, LSU. They're like, Derrick Henry, running back, Alabama. You know, like, they were showing all the players in, like, the CBS lead-in opening montage or whatever, and then there'd be, like, four ads for the game coming up at 3:30 because they know they need to draw ratings. Again, it's going to be huge. People are going to watch. I'll say this. I don't like...
I will guarantee it will be the highest-rated game...
Of the season.
Of the season.
Yes.
For college.
For college. Football. Yes.
Probably in the last 2 years, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, other than playoff games.
Yeah, other than playoff. Taking away playoff games.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say about the Super Bowl. You were talking about championship games and playoff games starting at a certain time. I don't like the way college football does it. I don't like that it's a Monday night at 8 p.m. I don't like that.
Yeah, that's too late.
But the Super Bowl is perfect. Mm-hmm. There's a reason the Super Bowl is timed out perfectly, which for us is like, what, 5:18 Central mm-hmm. time? Mm-hmm. It's not. It's late enough to where you can like spend your day getting things accomplished and do the things you need to do. It's early enough that when it's done, you're not like scrambling to get to bed and you're up late. It's over at 8 o'clock. Like it's that 5 to 8 window is my favorite window for sports. If the World Series and Stanley Cup final and everything could happen from 5 to 8, that would be my favorite.
Well, it's kind of like the NBA because you have 7 games. Well, hopefully it goes into 7 games, but it's in during the week. It's like 8:30 starts for all the NBA games. Game 1, 2, 3,
or 9:30 for Golden State,
or 9:30. So it's like they're late games, and I'm just like, come on, man. That's why I like when they go to Sunday, because then Sunday it's kind of more spread it out. Right. And then if it's the final game, then you can actually watch the final game of the series rather than stay up until 11 o'clock.
All right, coming up next, the East was likely won. The West will likely be decided in 5 days. A little college football talk when we come back here on Morning Drive. All right, back in here on Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Congratulations to Kathy Shields. She was the first person with the correct answer on Ryan Ellis. That was the voice that you have heard. So, Kathy Shields, you have qualified. Not won, but qualified for a chance to win the Winter Classic Celebration Flyaway to Dallas. The winner will receive round-trip airfare, hotel accommodations, a pair of tickets to see Lynyrd Skynyrd with special guests, the Allman Betts Band, and a sleep at the wheel at the American Airlines Center on Tuesday, December 31st, as well as a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Dallas Stars at the Cotton Bowl on Wednesday, January the 1st. Prizes courtesy of Outback Concerts. I mean, I actually had to listen to that during the break like 40 minutes ago just to make sure I knew who the answer was, because
it's tough.
To be honest, you don't hear Ryan Ellis a whole heck of a lot.
That is a tough, tough challenge. So if you qualify, you earned it, man.
I
like that. That's good stuff right there.
Cocktail party, Saturday, Georgia beats Florida. East is basically won, correct?
Yeah, East is basically done. Listen, I thought Florida fought valiantly in the second half, and Kyle Trask played well in the second half. But let's be very clear. This was won by because of two reasons. Georgia's defense statistically is as good as their stats indicate. I don't think they've been given enough credit for how good their defense is. Florida could not run the football at all. They could not convert on third down. I think they were 2 of 9 on third down. And let's be very clear. Jake Fromm was brilliant on third downs. So the Georgia Bulldogs were great on third down, and they stopped the ground game of Florida. That defense for Georgia is salty. They still have to play Auburn, Texas A&M, Georgia Tech, maybe a championship game. It's all sitting there in front of Georgia to make the playoffs. So they still have a chance. I think right now, though, the FPI actually gives Auburn a better percentage chance to win the game on the Plains over Georgia. So the question is, where should Georgia be ranked? I moved them up to 5th in my rankings from 6th ahead of Penn State. I think they would beat Penn State right now, but that's not really like a debate to be had. There are 4 teams in college football that are above everybody else, and those 4 are going to be debated heavily tomorrow night when the first rankings come out. I'm guessing that it's going to be LSU, Ohio State at 1 and 2. So I'm guessing Bama at 3, Clemson at 4. That's what my guess would be for tomorrow. But
that's the exact order I have.
Big news, of course, with the East being won essentially by Georgia. They still have to knock off. They still have to play Missouri. Still have to play Auburn and A&M. So they got a tough schedule. But it's basically, you know, they're in the driver's seat now. And oh, by the way, Florida State's looking for a new head football coach. Willie Taggart fired yesterday. $17.7 million buyout. That is a good job if you can get it. Please give me $17 million not to do my job.
That Florida game in Georgia game, I think it was – It lived up to the hype. You know, Trask is going to be a unique guy to evaluate on the next level.
Smart player.
Yeah, really smart player. I think they are the best thing for them. You never want to see a guy go down with injury, but I think that was the best thing for – I mean, having Trask at quarterback was the best thing for Florida. He would have never been quarterback had Felipe Franks had he not gotten hurt.
So my prediction 2 summers ago that Kyle Trask should be the starting quarterback for Florida, even though I was dead wrong for a year and a half, has finally come true.
Yeah,
finally
via injury, but I think they play much better. He gives them a much better opportunity at winning And that offense being two-dimensional instead of just one-dimensional, because that kid can make just about every throw, and he looks poised in a pocket. And he can take off and run when he needs to. But that game, to me, because, it, I mean, the announcers talked about it a lot, and even during halftime or before the game. You know, Georgia looks – you would have thought they had more than one loss. The way you look, the way people talk about Georgia and how you look at Georgia, because they don't play this exciting brand of football. But then you look at the stats, and they're first in defense. Their offense is basically the same as it was last year. Jake Fromm is having a good season, not great season, but a good season. And
well, their number one receiver came back too.
Exactly, number
Lawrence
one receiver.
Cager was back and had a
huge game this past Saturday.
Kirby has them playing the brand of football that Saban played the first 3 years in Tuscaloosa.
That's what they are.
Yeah, but he's going to have to kind of shift a little bit. But
you mean like a recruited player like Justin Fields?
Exactly. He's going to have he's going to have to get some more dynamic players, and can't keep playing this Bama old LSU-type football where run the ball, play action pass. But Jake Fromm, I mean, if there was any doubt about Jake Fromm, they should all be put to bed now. Because
that's a good defense.
He might not be the best quarterback in the country, but he's still, you know, if you're talking about draft stock, he's still a first-rounder to me. Because the guy showed up big. He did exactly what he was supposed to do against a defense that doesn't give up many points. Now, we've seen the last couple of weeks where two good quarterbacks back-to-back has somehow, some way, you know, been able to put up points against Florida's defense. And that's hard to do. Georgia has kept themselves in the talk for playoffs. With that win, they kept themselves. Now, if they don't lose a game from here on out, they put themselves in the SEC championship, and then all bets are off after that.
Yeah, it's LSU or Bama, and if you win, you get in.
See here, but here's the interesting part about the SEC, and people are going to be extremely mad.
Oh, I love where you're going with
this.
They
can get three teams in.
Yeah, it's not out of the question.
Bama loses to LSU.
Close.
Close.
With Tua or without? With,
I don't think it matters.
But it's a hurt Tua.
I don't think it matters.
It's 100%. It's not 100% Tua.
Yeah.
Then they beat Auburn. They do what they did a couple of years ago, sit out the SEC championship.
They're 11-1.
Okay. Then you have a 10-1 or 10-1 or 11-1.
See, 11-1 Georgia versus 12-0 LSU.
And if Georgia beats LSU, now you got three teams
with one loss,
and they all lost to one another.
How does that make you feel, Big Ten guy?
I just want the best team in.
And let's not go crazy, because the Big Ten could do the same
thing.
If Penn State, let's say hypothetically, goes on the road and beats Ohio State in a couple of weeks by a field goal, same LSU-Bama situation, right? If they win that game and Ohio State finishes the season 11-1, with their only loss being to an undefeated Penn State team who wins the Big Ten, you can make the case for two Big Ten teams to get in.
Yeah.
So it's not – now, I don't think Penn State, like Georgia, I haven't seen the play on the field yet to say that either of those two teams are good enough to win. I think we've seen it from Ohio State and LSU and Bama. We haven't necessarily seen it yet, the dominance from Georgia or Penn State. But those are totally real scenarios. Now, the good news for people that don't want that is that Oregon and Utah both handled their business this weekend. Oregon went on the road and crushed USC – probably getting Clay Helton fired, and Utah went on the road and beat Washington beat a really good Washington team on the road. So they're both going to end up potentially with one loss playing in the Pac-12 title game, which will be a great top 10 matchup. The winner would have a very good case to make the playoff over even an Oklahoma team that could probably go 12-1 and win the Big 12. So we've got a lot of teams still in it. Oh, by the way, Baylor's still undefeated. Minnesota's still undefeated. Wake Forest only has one loss. Who still has to play Clemson. There's about 10 or 12 teams that are still, quote, in the race. But it's right now there's four that I think are head and shoulders above everybody else. And
but
I don't think the committee's going
to
debate
that
tomorrow.
I would just love to see three SEC teams getting in because everybody would lose their mind.
Burn to the ground. Yeah.
Oh, everybody would lose their mind.
So you got three SEC teams in Clemson.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
I think that's riveting.
Ohio State would have to lose.
They would have to lose a game. Because here's how it could happen. They beat Penn State, so Penn State's out.
Mm-hmm.
Penn State beats Minnesota. Minnesota's out. and then they lose to Michigan in the final week of the year. Then you lose in the Big Ten title game. Then you have two losses and you're done.
Yeah.
So there still has to be a lot of losing, but there is a lot of losing left on the schedule for all these teams.
Yeah.
So it'll whittle itself down quickly. It always does. People get concerned, oh, somebody's going to get left out. Like, no, it always gets down to
the end. I would love to see three SEC teams with a shot at making it.
What if it's two Big Ten teams versus two SEC teams?
That'd be good, too.
And the rest the rest of the country's like, come on.
Well, I mean,
that would assume Clemson lost the game, which I can't see happening.
Well, it is kind of possible, though, because if LSU beats Alabama without Tua, then they run the table, and then Alabama has one loss, and then Georgia beats LSU in the SEC championship game, and then you have 3-1 loss SEC teams at that point.
Have you been listening to the show?
That's what we just said.
I know. I'm just repeating it.
I mean, I'm not trying to be a jerk here, but like I'm just repeating it.
Hold on. Okay.
That was Derek's entire rant this second.
Yeah, I know.
Do you think Wake Forest has a shot at beating Clemson?
No, but they are a one-loss Power 5 team. So I just include anybody that's got one loss in the Power 5 as sort of, quote, eligible, right? Uh-huh. So I sort of put, like, again, they're not going to beat Clemson. And by the way, this Clemson hatred, like everyone's like, oh, Clemson's not that good. They're winning by 38 points a game. Trevor Lawrence is putting up ridiculous numbers.
They're bored.
They
know that conference stinks, and they don't need their A game.
They are crushing people, and you know who I don't want to play in the playoff? Nick Saban or Clemson. I don't want to play Alabama or Clemson in the playoff. So, okay, LSU and your cute defense. Come on.
Ooh.
Come on.
This is that Orgeron agents over here.
Ohio State and LSU are totally deserving of being in the top four. No question about it. But everyone just is like, they look at Alabama and Clemson like they're just jokes right now. And I'm going, do you guys really want to do that? Like, because what's the opposite of this? This is it's not rat poison. This is motivation for Alabama and Clemson. And I just would be concerned about that if I was a fan of another team.
Put the wagers in yesterday, boys. LSU +8, over 64. I'm already locked in, ready to go. Don't ever question my objectivity.
I do like the over on that one. What is it? Would you say 64?
64.
Yeah, I'll take the over 100%. This has 38-33 written all over it.
D-Mace, I think LSU can win the game.
I think they're going to win, too. I mean, this is nothing new. I told you they were going to win.
What percentage is Tua? That's what I want to know.
85%.
75-80%.
I still don't see LSU stopping Alabama. So I'm not saying that Joe Burrow is not going to light up Bama's defense.
Mm-hmm.
Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to have a really good game, I think, that running back for LSU. I just don't know how LSU is going to stop Alabama in that passing attack.
Nick, sit Tua. Sit Tua. That's your best option.
Return of the Mac. Yeah. Stick to sports coming up at 8:45. Our 8 o'clock hour will include us getting back to the Titans from yesterday and also giving up a little love to Nashville SC. We're back after this on Morning Drive.